Okay, hello folks. My name is Linda M. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'll be your hostess for this workshop on November 15, 2020 on long-term abstinence during the holidays. I've got a lineup of 7 people that are going to share their experience, strength, and hope regarding the holidays and different issues that we go through. It's a time where there's gathering, there's family, there's friends, sometimes there's travel, and there's food. And so these folks have had some time in the See How program and will let us know some of their history and some of the things that have worked for them and maybe some things that happened, and we'll be able to share that. So first up is Ginger B, and I'll be the timer. How would you like to be timed?
Linda, could I please have a 5 and a 1?
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for being here, and thank you for listening for this to this today. You know, we are so very blessed to have PhoneBridge and to have this available to us, so we don't have to do this alone. That is the amazing part of this program. So my name is Ginger, and I am a compulsive eater. And I would actually like to start this with a prayer that comes from page 86 and 87 of the Big Book. God, direct my thinking today so that it is divorced of self-pity, dishonesty, self-will, self-seeking, and fear. God, inspire my thinking, decisions, and intuition. Help me to relax and take it easy. Free me from doubt and indecision. Guide me through this day and show me my next step. God, give me what I need to take care of any problems. I ask these things that I may be of maximum service to you and my fellow man. Amen. So, I am a compulsive eater. My name is Ginger, and I have been abstinent through the grace of God one day at a time, 9 years, 8 months, and 23 days. I'm a full-service sponsor. I first entered the rooms in 1989. It wasn't this program, it was our sister program. But I really didn't surrender to the program until I found See How, and that was in 2011. As a child, holidays, and we're talking about winter holidays, which really for me started it was October 31st. That was the first holiday and set off my celebrations. And I was the youngest of 8 children. And when I was about 3, we moved to another city away from our family. And so it was an hour's drive. And I grew up in Wisconsin. And so wintertime, a lot of times, we had snowstorms and things. So we pretty much had our holidays by ourselves. And then we would go visit families after the holidays. And being the youngest of 8 children, my mom did an amazing job of providing food. And she always had homemade treats to delight whoever was in the house, and everyone was welcome. And food really was the central focus. Every holiday, you know, as in many families, stuffing ourselves was, you know, protocol. And it was a joyful time. And, I have fond memories. But one thing is that as I got older and all my older brothers and sisters went, I'm 67, so I grew up during the Vietnam era. And we had many holidays where not everybody was here. 3 of my brothers were in the military at the same time. And it was just kind of a sad, that was sadder times. But when people came back, we had our celebrations again. And what happened is it progressed into these wonderful, where we spent time playing games together and puzzles and laughing. And, you know, it was just like, oh, this is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. As an adult, what I did to take control of my holidays is I've expanded. And so we include our extended family and friends in our celebrations. Now, when I first came into our sister program and I heard all the requirements of doing the steps, working the tools, doing the traditions. You know, I didn't ever think that I could do it at a holiday. I couldn't imagine getting through Halloween without eating crap. I couldn't imagine Christmas without what came up. And, you know, and my holidays ended at Valentine's Day because screw the first. You know, that wasn't a good time to stop overeating, and that's really what I did. But what I learned, I couldn't imagine how will I ever get through them. And in the beginning, I had a pink cloud, which really helped me get through anything because I was so excited that I had lost weight. I was so excited that I was dealing with things. But then my thinking came back, and I felt jealous of other people. I was envious that other people could eat the sugar and flour treats that I couldn't eat. And so it was a real tug of war for me. And sometimes I would succumb and I would say, oh, you know, I will start this on another day. You know, it's okay. In fact, I had a friend who was in AA, and we both started working together the same year. And she said to me one time, I remember walking in to work, and I said, oh, I have to start my program over. And she said, so is being a compulsive eater not as bad as being an alcoholic? Because when, you know, we lose our sobriety, it's a big thing, but you seem to lose your abstinence all the time. And, well, you know, it wasn't a big thing to me because I didn't get it, because I hadn't surrendered to the program. And you know, I had so many day ones. But, you know, later that got to me. And so when I came in to see how, I got to surrender for some reason. I got to say, I'm not unique. I need to work the program exactly the way it is written. And so with that came serenity. With that came peace. And when I was in my compulsive eating era, I was only concerned about food. And so I literally, before Thanksgiving, overate for about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving so that I would have my stomach stretched out so I could consume as much food as possible. I didn't care about the people. I didn't care about the good time. I cared about the food. And my sweet children, when I was in program and I had all those day ones, my daughter said to me, Mom, because she was going to school, would you please not eat the things in my room? Because she had her little basket in her room. And you guys, I ate, and I couldn't not eat her food. I was sick, and the holidays were another reason for me to eat. And I know you're going to hear this a lot, and I hate to say it for everybody else, but the holidays are just another day. Thanksgiving is just Thursday. And I am no longer missing the food. So coming in to see how and surrendering, I remember a Thanksgiving where we flew to Kansas where our son lived, and my daughter was in program with me. And we had an abstinent Thanksgiving dinner with all the trainees that were abstinent. And I just remember the peace and the serenity and the grandchildren. And it's like, thank you, God, that I'm not fighting. Thank you, God, that I can be present to the people who I love and care about. And thank you, God, that my clothes are going to fit me after dinner, and they're not going to be tight, and they're not going to be uncomfortable, and I'm going to wake up the next day, and I'm not going to have a hangover from all the sugar and crap that I ate. And, you know, this program is phenomenal in what it does, where it makes every day a special day, but yet every day a normal day. And I no longer have to worry about what's on anybody else's plate. I get to be abstinent no matter what, and that is such a gift. How has long-term abstinence affected me? You know, it's given me peace, serenity, and joy, happy, joyous, and free. So what I'm planning to do this year is, as a child, we spent our holidays just with our family, That's what we're going to do this year. We have a daughter who lives here in town and a grandson, and so we'll be, you know, going between our two homes. We see each other on a regular basis. My husband and I are their primary caretaker for our grandson, and so we will eat food, and we will have food that I won't eat. But we'll have lots of food that I will eat. It'll be delicious, and we'll play, and we'll laugh. And, you know, it's like, thank you, God. Thank you for the freedom. And what's so beautiful about our program, especially about PhoneBridge, is we have marathon meetings going from 5:30 a.m. till really 1 a.m. the next day, because the last meeting is on midnight. And on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, we have marathons, just like our Thanksgiving marathon that is coming up a week from Thursday. And so you never have to be alone. You never have to white-knuckle it thinking, oh, how can I do this? All you have to do is make a phone call, and you'll be hearing recovery. And it's such a gift, such a gift. So, Linda, I haven't heard you, but I think I'm going to close now. So, because I know there's lots of people and they'll have lots to say. So, my name is Ginger, and I am just grateful to be here today. And I hope you all have a very abstinent holiday period, because coming out of that, that's the best present you can give yourself. So, thanks a lot, Linda, and I pass.
Thank you, Ginger. Yeah, I knew it just a smidge early. Again, my name is Linda M. I'm a compulsive eater, and I would like to encourage folks to check, press *6, and make sure you are on mute. There is a little bit of noise coming in. And the next person that we have up is Lonnie. And Lonnie, how would you like me to time you?
How many minutes, Linda?
15.
15 minutes. Give me a 5-minute warning, please.
I will do that. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Lonnie, compulsive eater. And Linda, thank you. And glad to be here and serve with the other speakers, the other panelists. I saw the list of names. I won't repeat them right now, but stick around. I can assure you those before me and after me will astound you with what they've got to say. You get what you get. But I'm a compulsive eater. I'm glad to be here. Been a member since 2010. Lurking around some phone bridge meetings in 2009. Walked away thinking all of you were nutso. And then eventually I crashed and burned and saw the reality of my disease. Picked up the phone February of 2010, got a sponsor and got started. Recommitment date, December 1st, last year, a couple of weeks. That's going to be a step up for a year. I couldn't be more excited. Why has that worked for the last 11 and a half months? Just willing to be willing is all I can say. And it's the gift of abstinence. I may be hearing chimes, Linda. I don't know. But certainly glad to be here today, share a little bit on abstinence during the holidays, and I will say this again as far as, you know, getting what you get from me. I've learned from you, from all of you. You're my people. You're my recovery family. What I've gained as far as compulsive eating and learning how to deal with not only the holidays, but every single day of my life without turning to the food, I have just learned in this program, the fantastic CEA How program. I had tried everything in the world before this with some success, lose the weight, gain it back, plus some, lose the weight, gain it back, plus some. But never in my life have I been able to maintain. And I should share that total weight loss, 82 pounds in the program for 10 years in the same size clothes. What a miracle. What a gift. So, but I've learned from you. I borrow from you. I quote from you. And if you've heard me talk before, you probably heard me say this, but the first time I borrow from you, I quote you as the source. The next time I borrow from you, I say, as you've heard before. And then from then on and forever after that, I can just borrow from you and say, as I've always said. So I can't do that, though, because I've got to already agree with the with what the previous speaker has said as far as marathon meetings, and it's just another day. My goodness, I don't want to miss that opportunity for marathon meetings on the upcoming holidays, and thank you for the phone bridge for that. And I don't want to lose sight of the fact that any of these days is just another day. Same number of hours, same number of minutes, same number of seconds. But where does the problem lie for me? The big book on page 101 outlines very clearly that I'm not limited in anything or anywhere or anyone that I want to see or spend time with or where I want to go. It even says whoopee parties are just fine, with a caveat, as long as I am in fit spiritual condition. And for me, that is deeply founded in the program. I just have to be there. Otherwise, I'm just fooling myself. And I don't want to discourage anyone with the holidays coming up that, you know, abstinence couldn't miraculously be achieved during the holiday. But why wait? I would encourage anyone that today is a great day to start abstinence. And just do it that way. The legitimate reason is also something I have to pay attention to. And I have found that to be very helpful. Am I there for the food, or am I there for the fun? Am I there for the food, or am I there for the function? Am I there for the food, or am I there for the fiesta, the family, the fellowship, the festivities, the fraternity? Am I there for the food, or am I there for the friendship, the fulfillment, the faith? Why am I going, and why am I there? And so that helps me as far as my purpose and getting through the day. Some strategies, I'll get back to that in a second. These danger zones, as far as these holidays, and I'm sure we all face them. I'm sure they're common. I'm not alone in this. But some of us have marvelous, wonderful memories with holidays. Some of us, not so much. For me, I have marvelous, wonderful memories of holidays. It's because of my compulsive eating that a lot of it's tied to food. But that's not the fault of the holidays, and it's not anyone else's fault. Some people might call these danger zones or triggers. We have our 911 emergency plan that we talk about, maybe getting my buttons pushed. But some things that can create difficulty for me during these times, I have to mention the global pandemic. Just in passing, it's an outside issue, but it's affecting us as groups, it's affecting us as individuals, and it's going to affect many of us for the holidays. Are we getting together? That may be a problem. Are we not going to be able to get together? That may be a problem. The wife and I have chosen to follow the guidelines, and right now we're not scheduled to see anyone but the two of us for the holidays. It's killing us. It's absolutely killing us. I don't want to eat over it, though. And so I have to face that, and I have to talk about it. Travel can be stressful. Stress can be stressful. Relationships can be stressful. Dynamics. Forced to spend time. This is the way I put it. Forced to spend time with people that we otherwise may not see all year long. These family dynamics. And so there are things that I need to be aware of for the holidays, and I need to share, talk about it, think about it, plan for it. What strategies can I use? You taught me this. Again, I can't say that enough. But some strategies: start the holiday event with a phone call and follow up the holiday event with a phone call. In other words, bookend it. I can call someone before the gathering. I can call someone after the gathering. Check in before and after. I can share my feelings with sponsors, with others in meetings. I can check the menu to make sure that there's going to be abstinent food available for me. If not, perhaps bring some of my own. I can bring my own vehicle, leave if necessary. I can drink lots of water. I can hydrate. And I certainly had the marathon meetings written down. And so a lot of tools. As far as, you know, holiday horrors, again, my experience was overall good, but my bad experiences definitely have to do with food or my other program getting mixed up in that some with drugs and alcohol, but over the years, but specifically with food. As a child, probably grade school, fifth grade, sixth grade, down on the farm in southern Oklahoma, mass quantities of all my favorite food. And when the meal's over, most of the family is laughing and yucking it up and having a good time because I'm rolling around on the floor with my pants unbuttoned. I'm so miserable. I'm about to die. And I've just eaten so much food that it turned into just a really bad experience. And I hadn't thought about that until I was asked to speak here today. But as far as the good side of it and holidays, something that I found positive that I can do, regardless of the mood I'm in, I can think about other people and what the holiday means to them and maybe send a note or a card to someone, call someone, or even at the event, wish someone, in my case, a Merry Christmas. Wish someone a happy Thanksgiving. Tell them that I love them. Tell them I'm glad to see them. In other words, try and be proactive and positive.
5 more minutes.
Thank you. My birthday is December 24th, and being raised around the holidays like that, and with a birthday around the holidays, that was always a good experience for me. My family made sure it was a good experience. And people oftentimes say, well, you were probably shorted as a child. Well, whatever I was as a child, I get to make up for it in adulthood because every single birthday up until this year, I've had lots of people around on my birthday as an adult, and so that's neat. So I wrote down here, give to myself the gift of abstinence, the greatest gift to ourselves. And I can always do that with your help and with a power greater than long in this program, and I'm grateful for that. I'm going to close with page 45 from AA Comes of Age. I'm always touched by the thoughts and the inspirational things that they said as they were celebrating in 1955 when Bill and Dr. Bob was already gone, but they were giving the fellowship to us in 1955. AA Comes of Age. It had grown up, retired, and has been since then. But here's what they said. They said, who could render an account of all the memories that had once been ours, and who could estimate the release and joy that these years have brought to us? Who could possibly tell the vast consequences of what God's work through AA had already set in motion, and who could penetrate the deeper mystery of our wholesale deliverance from slavery, a bondage to a most hopeless and fatal obsession which for centuries had possessed the minds and bodies of men and women like ourselves. And today I have that deliverance from slavery. I have that freedom from bondage. It's because of this program. It's because of abstinence. It's because of people like you. I'm very grateful to be here. Signing off.
Thank you so much, Lonnie. Thank you for joining us and for sharing that with us. Okay, and Mary Q.
Well, thank you for the other people that have spoken. I hope you're not preparing to be astounded. My name is Mary. I'm a compulsive eater, food addict.
Mary, before you start, how would you like me to time you?
The same thing you just did, which was 5 minutes and then 1 minute.
Okay, will do.
That works for me. Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks. I'm grateful to Linda for asking me to be of service, and you know, I was taught a long time ago, when you're asked to be of service, say yes. You don't know what the opportunity means. It's none of your business, so here I am. I've been in CHOW. I came into these rooms almost 20 years ago. I have 7 years of back-to-back abstinence with a 77-pound weight release, and I am a food inventory, step, and maintenance sponsor. you know, I was given sort of a broad stroke outline of what this, you know, the workshop would be, or this presentation today, and part of it is my holidays as a child, and I went back to the most joyful days, which was very delightful. Thank you, Linda, for that. When I was a very young girl, my father was raised in Oklahoma, and my grandparents still lived on a farm, and we ended up there in of a Christmas, and I don't remember, I must have been 3 or 4 years old, but somebody made my sister and I topsy-turvy dolls, and if you look them up, it's a doll that you flip it over, and it's got a nighttime face and a daytime face, and they're covered, their face is covered with a skirt, but it works in reverse. And I said, oh my God, I wonder what that thing is, and, you know, so it took me back to some really cool memories. So my childhood holidays were quite special. I felt, you know, we sort of lived a charmed life. My parents were very much in love. My father died, though, when my mom was pregnant with the 9th child. So that was, that, you know, so the holidays changed very quickly. Like, overnight, they went from these lighthearted, joyful events to, oh, my God. So, but my father was military. He was active military when he passed, and there were all sorts of programs. And the military sort of took on a, you know, they took on a very supportive role, and we used to be presented with gift certificates and a big party, and Santa would give us each a stocking and stuff. So from the age of 8, the holidays were sad, you know. And so I had to really work through that, because for years all I wanted to do, as soon as it was a holiday, I wanted to go home and paint my bedroom black. I didn't want any light to get in there. I didn't want any joy. And I didn't understand why I always got the flu over the holidays, but I lived every year knowing, oh, I wonder when I'll get the flu. I wonder, because I would have high fevers. I'd be sick as a dog. But, you know, it started dawning on me. So I found CHOW through coming in through another program that I was in for 18 years. I could not find abstinence. I need the structure and the discipline of CHOW, which included really not having sugar and flour, not just pretending I wasn't having it. It was really not having it. And once I surrendered that stuff, it wasn't like everything became so easy or anything, but what happened my first holidays in this program, I would take my own food. Nobody noticed. Who's looking at the lady in the corner with the whatever in the bowl? They don't. So that's what I found hilarious. In my mind's eye, I found myself feeling like, you know, being naked in the classroom, like everybody's going to look at me. But the first time I did it with my sponsor's support and direction, you know, guidance, there was so little fanfare to it that it was like, oh my God, I could have been doing this before. So, I learned to manage by surrendering, and, you know, and now in my family, you know, it's been a lot of years since I had any of the extra stuff on the holidays and stuff, but I'm the one that brings the big stuff, you know, the raw stuff and things like that, so they can always count on me. This year I have made a very clear decision. I'm staying home. I live, I'm retired. I live alone. I have a niece that's living with me right now. She lives out of the country and can't return to where she lives. So she's with me. And so she and my daughter and my niece are they're the people I see other than my Zoom family. And I'm one of 6 siblings. There were 9 of us, so there's 6 siblings now, and we're on text with each other a lot lately. So that's a big blessing that's come of this, is, you know, this time not being able to travel down the street. I have a brother down the street. I have a brother around the corner. I have a nephew around the corner. I mean, I'm surrounded by family, but I just don't see them. And we all, you know, I'm trying to be as smart as I can be, because I'm nearly 69. I've had heart disease, some pretty severe heart disease. I have no symptoms anymore, though, after 20 years, and that's thank you for this program. But I take the extra time I deserve for doing things like exercise. I have workout routine with, we FaceTime. We do workout routines and stuff like that where people that met through another class, so we've been able to maintain that. And what a blessing. I mean, we thank each other so much because, you know, when you read about what's going on with people that are really, you know, the health decline is not doing anybody any favors, and there are ways of kind of getting around it. So I'm taking advantage of being creative and willing. The way I manage every day being, you know, Thanksgiving is on a Thursday. I don't know what other days, holidays fall on this year, because for so many years now, they're just another day of the week, because I participate in candlelight meditation meetings. You know, I do many things on those days. I've gone to open houses at members' houses and stuff like that, you know, where it's just you're sure that you're going to be around supportive people and everything like that. So I've just learned I deserve to be pampered. If being pampered means, you know, declining an invitation for my own well-being, that's pampering me. That's taking that really, you know, like taking the extra step to ensure that after the holidays I don't have to be pissed at myself. I don't have to be in remorse and trying to figure out how I'm going to get these pants on again. Because that's how I lived for so long. I remember, oh my God, I remember being in absolute terror. I worked at a university. We would have like a 6-week break sometime, just these long, enormous Christmas breaks, actually probably 3 weeks. I could never get back into my clothes, ever. I just, and I I was just, I was at my wit's end, and I did try a lot of different programs before I found CHAL. I tried another 12-step program, but I also did liquid protein and all the stuff, and I think my favorite when I went on one fruit a day and, you know, real healthy stuff, but none of it worked until I found this, because this carries me through the day after. I always had that real burst of energy getting through and reaching a goal weight. Well, now what? This gets the now what's taken care of. Now what? We maintain it. We keep doing what we do. We, you know, we shoulder the burden of our responsibilities and keep trudging the road of happy destiny, because that is where, that's where the glory is. I really feel like this is something that has brought me so much. My perspective on day-to-day life is just, it's just changed considerably in the last, you know, the 7 years of continuous abstinence, but certainly in the years since I found 12-step program and discovered willingness. How much willingness makes a difference? So my holidays are, I was thinking about different things that have helped me, and one of them is, If I always want to be in a place of serenity, there is a way of achieving that. And the way I heard it put was, my serenity is in direct proportion to my level of expectations. So when I'm in a place of Christmas makes everything better, and all families get together, and there's never, you know, the real, you know, the real fantasy that, you know, I mean, I like to go there sometimes, but it's never been that way. So I have a way of making it more manageable for me. I know that if I have an expectation that on Christmas this year I will still be abstinent, that's pretty cool expectation. But and that's about all, you know, that's about all I would ever try to put out there as something that I have not yet gotten to.
Five more minutes.
Me. Pardon me?
5 more minutes.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I'm sorry. I just stepped outside in my backyard, and I'm having a glorious day. So the way that I look forward to spending my holidays this year is truly spending time pruning my grapes and, you know, harvesting things that I've been planting for the past few months and stuff like that, looking for sunny days so I can go ride my boogie board. I come from a big family. I'm one of the six of us that are remaining. The brothers all surf, so they're always up at the beach surfing. I live right by an ocean, and I go boogie boarding and stuff. So, you know, life is really kind of luxurious when you think about it. I mean, what there is nothing that I can find. Even if I really, 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 really look, I can find nothing to complain about. And I hope that helps somebody out there that feels like there's, you know, because I know for myself that I was miserable enough to feel like I really deserved something to complain about. There's enough tragedy and sadness in my life that I could certainly muster up some tragedy, and I don't have to do that anymore, you know. And it does say we have a new freedom and a new happiness, and I didn't think I would go back to the same freedom when I started thinking about it. It's a new freedom. I never had it before. So the new freedom is knowing that if I continue getting on my knees every morning as I have done for the past almost decade now, and saying my prayers and writing and calling my sponsor without fail, just because that's the way it's written, making my reach out calls, getting to 3 meetings a day, all that stuff, I know if I do those things, they're not real complicated, it's so simple. Those are the things that make me stay on this side of positive, this side of remorse, you know, having a place where it's like, okay, this feels good. I'm so glad I'm up this morning. I'm so, you know, it's morning here. It's like, what time is it? I've got 10:38. So it's like still morning here, but it's just such a beautiful day here. And I have the rest of the day and think, oh, I've been of service. Wow. I mean, not that I'm special, but just that what a neat opportunity. I got to be of service. So I'm really grateful that you guys are here. I really I use the Zoom meetings, and I've not been on a phone bridge meeting since probably it's been about 11, I don't know how many years. I was up in Washington, and I misspoke on the phone bridge meeting, and I thought, they're just terrible, and they weren't. Nobody was terrible. It's like when I first came in to see how, and they had a discussion board, like you could go in and chat, and I was always getting scolded because I didn't know I wasn't allowed to speak. They had the same protocol in a written chat room, and I was always out of line. So I was like, they're so strict. But now I'm one of the ones guarding the doors or guarding our traditions, making sure we know we are not the same as anybody else. We have a specific set of things that work for us, and that's, you know, so that's how it works for me. So thank you, guys. I have nothing pithy to read to you, but I'm just so grateful to be here and be a part of this fellowship and be a part of this workshop. Thanks so much for asking me, Linda.
And thank you, Mary Q. I really appreciate it for having you join us here today. And again, my name is Linda M. I'm a compulsive eater, and this is the November 15th, 2020 workshop on long-term abstinence during the holidays. And our next speaker is Steve P.
Hi, good morning, Linda. Steve here.
Good morning. How would you like to be timed?
Can you please let me know when there are 5 minutes left and when I have 1 minute left?
I'll do it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And good day, everybody. My name is Steve. I am a compulsive eater. And to identify here, my date of abstinence is July 21st, 2004, and today makes 5,962 days of back-to-back abstinence here in Seattle, and it's the only abstinence I've ever had here in Seattle. I came to my first meeting July 20th, 2004, got abstinent the next day, and been abstinent ever since. And I've been on maintenance since December 21st, 2004, and I also did the math on this for some reason, just because I like math. But today, I will have weighed out, measured everything, written it down, called in, committed for 17,886 meals. And that's nights, weekends, and these things called holidays, which I think the holidays that most people are talking about are holidays that I've never celebrated. And probably will never celebrate, and that's okay. This is always an interesting time of year for me because people like to talk about, quote-unquote, the holidays, and what they really mean is most of the time is Christmas, and sometimes I'll throw in Thanksgiving, and those are holidays that I really don't pay attention to, and haven't since I got since I've been abstinent, and I've never celebrated a Christmas. I wouldn't even know what a Christmas thing was, and because that's not my religion. Say about what most people call the holidays, but the thing I know is this: in my house right now, none of my food is abstinent, and anywhere I go in the world, none of the food is abstinent. And so some of you are probably wondering, what does that mean? And it's only abstinent when it's written down, weighed, measured, called in, committed. It becomes abstinent, provided it's on the food plan. Until I do that, it's not abstinent food. And yeah, I always like saying that, especially around the time of the holidays, because people go, there's so much food that's not abstinent. And I said, it's all not abstinent. Even the food that you're thinking of eating the next day may not be, is not abstinent until it's actually weighed out, called in, committed, written down, and so on and so forth. That's how we define abstinence. And for me, it has to be that way no matter what's going on in the world. It tells me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I have to fit myself in the causes and conditions. Nobody's going to change for me, you know. And so as a result, and this is just me, I think I've eaten outside in a restaurant maybe 5 times, but it's probably been less than that. And that was early on in abstinence. And I take my food everywhere that I go. And sometimes I've been at occasions where people have invited me for family get-togethers. It could be in a restaurant. It could be in their house. And as a rule these days, either I don't go, or if I do go, once the quote-unquote food starts, I'm up and out of there. No reason to socialize with food, to be part of food, even if I bring my own, could bring my own food. You know, that sort of stuff has gone, for me, has gone by the wayside. You know, if you want to visit with me, if you want to socialize with me, if you'd like to pay attention to me, let's do it without food as part of the thing. You know, and I feel the same way about, quote-unquote, drinking and some other things that I have been abstaining and sober from for many, many years now, one day at a time. You know, but I will say this, is that I did try for years, I did try to control and enjoy my food. And, you know, at various times before coming into this program, until I was eventually eating out of control and couldn't stop and found myself eating myself to death. That did I partake when family functions, when food was present? Of course. You know, it's about the only way that I could handle that situation. I come from a long line of compulsive eaters on both sides, way back when, and I don't know if it's in my DNA or whatnot, but I quickly learned how to be a compulsive eater, an alcoholic, a compulsive gambler, all sorts of interesting addictions, you know, that run through my family. I was able to pick up and eventually, thank God, found recovery from all of it, you know. But as I've stayed abstinent here and see how I think what's been more important than just the physical abstinence, which I don't even think about, it's just part of my life, and what I do day in and day out. Me being physically abstinent these days is no different than breathing, but there is one important caveat. I don't think about breathing. You know, I just get up in the morning and I just start breathing. I don't tell myself, Steve, remember, it's time to start breathing. But I do have to pay attention to what goes in my mouth food-wise. And I just work these 7 tools day in and day out. I have a sponsor that is very rigorous with me, because that's just the way that it needs to be, I guess. And I even have to give my food in the order that it's there on the maintenance food plan, you know, so that my sponsor can follow along with no problem, you know. And I give over my all what I've done for the 7 tools for the day before, and give the food for the day, and go on from there, day in and day out. And nothing goes in my mouth unless it's been committed to my sponsor in writing. I won't do it, you know. And I find that that's just what works for me. And when I do that, I get to work on the other elements of this program, the mental, emotional, and most importantly to me these days, the spiritual. But it's got to start with me being physically abstinent to work on spiritual ideas and try to improve my emotional health. and mental well-being, well, not being physically abstinent doesn't work for me. I tried that for years in other 12-step programs where I have long-term sobriety and abstinence in them as well, and kept trying to work on this character defect of gluttony to see if I could, quote-unquote, eventually control and enjoy my eating, and just not able to. It just wasn't part of the equation for me. But I find that my relationships with my family members of all types are one of two types. Either they're pretty well developed and they allow me to have a healthy relationship with them, or they're no longer in my life. Those are the kind of boundaries that have had to be set, you know. And it's been working this program, but also working other programs where I've learned tools and how to set boundaries that are very, very important so that I don't cause the emotional and mental upset with me. And I no longer want to cause emotional and mental upset with anybody else as well. So I continue to work on that sort of stuff. You know, when we do that, when you get into maintenance, you know, one of the things that you do eventually is that you take what's called a relationship inventory, and you note all your relationships, which ones are toxic and which ones are healthy and which ones can perhaps be improved. And, you know, I'm glad today that I was able to remove the ones that were toxic. And some of them involve family members, you know. Some of them I just have to set healthy boundaries, you know, with, you know, whether it's with my father, who I'm almost the primary caretaker for, whether it's with my brothers, whether it's with, you know, the kids, the grandkids, whether it's with my husband, whatever it is, you know, I've got to set things in such a way that it doesn't cause me to get out of balance one way or the other. It doesn't mean that I don't. It just allows me to define those parameters of what is healthy and what's not and what I need to pay attention to. Because you guys have told me that if I don't pay attention to that sort of stuff, and I guess for some people, as I've heard people share in a variety of programs now going on close to over 28 years, one day at a time, that these holidays, quote-unquote, they cause a tremendous amount of discord, discontent, restlessness, irritability, and downright people getting, you know, fistfights and so forth, you know, over whatever took place, what never got cleaned up, what resentments are people are carrying and whatnot. And, you know, and as a result, I hear people, you know, going back to whatever their addiction is, and in this case, you know, going right back to the food, and because it's so easily available to just say, you know what, I've just had it, and boom, pick it up, throw it in the mouth, down it goes, and there goes the abstinence with it, as well as everything else. And my recovery is too valuable to let anybody upset me in that way, and I'd rather not be around them if that's the case. You know, I don't need to show people that recovery has turned me into some kind of martyr or the ability to handle anything that goes on or to get along with those people that I really don't want in my life and are only there because they're quote-unquote family. You know, thank you. And I always get in a lot of issues with people over this because people think because they're family, somehow we have to get along, we should get along, and so on and so forth. And I remind myself that the only reason I'm with these people sometimes is because they are, quote-unquote, my family. And if they weren't my family, I wouldn't be with them. So I say if that's the case, then maybe I shouldn't be with them, whether they're family or not. And so I've had to take a long look at that and do a lot of work in those sorts of areas that now I'm able to get along with just about anybody, quote-unquote, in my family, you know. And but it takes a lot of work and a lot of willingness to take a look at myself and what my part is in all these deals and so on and so forth. You know, if I think I show up to my family and think that they're the problem and I'm not, it reminds me that there's still a lot of work for me to do. I always like what I heard an AA speaker say years ago. He went and asked his sponsor, was I in a dysfunctional family? And his sponsor looked at him, you know, kind of quizzically and asked him, were you in that family? You know, to think that I grew up in a dysfunctional family where everything was not hunky-dory and so on and so forth, that, you know, that they were all the mess and I was the one that was fine. You know, I'm a daily drug addict at age 13, a daily drunk at age 15, you know, compulsive gambler by the age of 17, you know, and to think that I wasn't, that it's all my family that's all screwed up, not me, is terrible. And, of course, a compulsive eater probably since, you know, day one, right out of the gate, so to speak, no doubt about that. But, you know, if you don't pick up these addictions and take them to the extent that I take them to, I know there's some others in this program that have taken them to that extent as well, that, you know, and then just, you know, think that, oh, everything is A-okay, I just got to get the food straight. If I could just, you know, stop eating the way that I'm eating, my life wouldn't get better, and I'd be able to deal with everything that goes along. And, you know, that's just a lie that, that my head tells me. But it's good to be talking about these things at any time. And, you know, it is possible to stay abstinent on any single day of the year. I always tell people when they talk about holidays, I go, if you think this holiday season is rough, wait till Groundhog Day. And they go, wait, what's so special about Groundhog Day? That's not even not really a holiday. And I go, well, why should these holidays be any different than that day or any other day? You know, it doesn't really matter. I've got to stay abstinent, you know, if I want to stay in recovery as a result, if I want to have the kind of life that's guaranteed to me in the See How concept. And I want that more than anything today. And just everybody else has been closing early, so I will close early as well. But I always like to close with something that one of our co-founders, Fred S., said, and it goes like this. He says, when you get your food in order, you will then get the rest of your life in order. And I used to think that if I could get the rest of my life in order, no matter what day of the year it is, if I could just get this life in order, I'd be able to eat the way that I wanted to. And I had it all backwards. I had to get the food straight first, and then I could work on getting the life that I have today. You know, simply unbelievable. Living here 7,200 feet up in the Rockies, my husband, my two dogs, and my cat, and having a wonderful Sunday here. And thank you, Linda, for asking me to share. It's always an honor to be asked to participate in the panel, and I'm truly humbled by being with the group that's collected today. I know all of them personally, and it's good to hear from them and hear their experience, strength, and hope. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Linda, for putting this together. With that, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve. And I truly appreciate all the folks that have spoken so far. I do want to take a minute to remind everybody that there is going to be a Thanksgiving marathon meeting, a day of marathon meetings on Thanksgiving, and it starts at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time with a relapse recovery meeting, and then all the regular meetings will happen, and in between there will be more meetings, a fellowship time, if there's not a full hour in between, and it will go until the last meeting that starts midnight Eastern Time. So if there's ever a time you feel uncertain, or certainly this time where there's shelter in place in many areas, or family is distant and you can't get to them, if you're feeling lonely, just know that you are not alone. Just have to pick up the phone, dial in the same phone number, and you will be with other people that understand what it's like to be a compulsive eater during this time. So our next speaker that is coming up is Joanne. Are you on the line?
I am on the line, Linda. Thank you.
Super. And you're welcome. How would you like me to...
A 5 and a 1 would be great. Thank you for asking me to share today. Boy, I've been thinking all day about holidays and how it was when I was a little girl. And I sent a text to my niece today, and I said, it makes me sad to think about those holidays when I was little, because there was so much fighting and so much pain and so much... yelling and being mad, that the only way that I escaped from all that was to eat. And there was always plenty of food. I mean, from when I was really, really little, my mom and dad eventually divorced, but before they divorced, we used to go to my aunt's house about 5 miles away, and the whole family would be there, and the us kids would play, and all the aunts and my mom would make these wonderful Scandinavian dishes, because we're Norwegian, and so we had things like lutefisk and lefse and krumkaka and rosettes and all sorts of things that you may not even know what they are, but they were really traditional in our family. We had them every single year, and I looked forward to them. And my one aunt would make homemade pickles, and they were so great. And I would just eat, you know, I was part of the Clean Plate Club. My mom told me that it was really important to be part of the Clean Plate Club, and so I started. My mom and dad divorced when I was about 7, and my mom remarried shortly afterwards, and we started having our own Christmases at my house. And we lived in a small home, so it was very crowded, and my stepfather was a drinker. And I remember many Christmas Eves, my mom calling up to the bar and begging him to come home, and she would be crying. He would come home drunk. We'd have all this food on the table, and we'd go through the motions of eating. And then I would head off to church to sing in the choir or sing a solo because I was a singer. And I kind of got away from everybody then. And then we'd come home afterwards, and by that time my stepdad was sort of sober again, and we opened up presents, and everything seemed to be okay. And I remember one year he gave me a pencil sharpener, a real pencil sharpener that you attach to the wall and you grind up the pencil. And I thought that was about the neatest present I ever had because we didn't have one, and whenever I was using pencils, I'd have to use a knife to whittle down the lead. Anyway, that was my childhood. When I went away and got married, my husband and I would visit my parents on one holiday, and then his parents were 90 miles away on another holiday, and we lived in Michigan. So it was a long trip back and forth from one place to the other. And when we were going from Minnesota to Iowa on Christmas Day, we'd have my family would celebrate on Christmas Eve, and then his family always celebrated on Christmas Day. And I thought that was really cool because I had never had Christmas on Christmas Day. And his family was so much more sane, and it was happy, and it was playful, and it wasn't so much about food. It was just about being together and laughing and playing games and just celebrating being together. And I just loved being with his family. Then when they moved to Arkansas, then the trips even got more spread out. We moved to California, and we had to go from, you know, one year we'd go to Arkansas to visit his parents, and next year we'd go to Minnesota to visit my parents, and so on. And I always had these expectations. It's going to be different this year. It's going to be different. Everybody's going to be okay at my house. And it was never any different. It was always crazy. It always ended up with my mom crying and my stepdad yelling. And we were very crowded, and it was just wonderful to get away from there. When I got but food was really the most important thing. And those Scandinavian foods were just absolutely, we had to have them. Even though my husband could not stand the fish that we had to eat on Christmas Eve, we had it anyway, and that was just what we did. And I loved that tradition, and I also loved the tradition of going to church on Christmas Eve Christmas Eve. When I got abstinent in 1999. I very easily let go of my obsession about food. Going to my family and going to his family I had to educate them about what I was doing, why I was doing it, and they thought I was kind of weird. I mean, it took You know, it took several holidays for them to really get that I was going to be doing this no matter what. I did it in the summer, I did it in the winter, I did it in the fall. I ate this way. I weighed and measured my food. I didn't eat some of the food that they prepared. It was just the way it was, and they kind of got over it after, you know, a few years. But what happened to me is that those expectations about holidays did not let go. I didn't let go of them, even though I was abstinent. I still had this imagination about how my holiday was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a beautifully set table. There was supposed to be beautifully decorated home, beautiful lights on the outside of my house, packages just decorated gorgeously. And I really love gift wrapping, and I just got to make beautiful, beautiful gift wrapping, and people admired my gift wrapping, and so I got a lot of kudos for that. But those expectations that I had about making that perfect Christmas were always, always diminished and always defeated, because it was never enough. There was something missing, and it took a while for me of working the steps, working the tools, letting go of the food, to really start seeing that my expectations were unrealistic. There was no such thing as a perfect Thanksgiving, no such thing as a perfect Christmas, no such thing as a perfect New Year's. It was just another day. And I heard that many times in the program. It's just another day, Joanne. Thanksgiving is on Thursday. And who knows, you know, Christmas is just another day. And little by little, I've let go of those expectations. I used to bake a lot because I really love to bake. And I would bake, and my husband would eat all the food. And then I'd take it to the neighbors, or I'd take it to family gatherings or to the church gatherings or whatever. But I wouldn't eat it, and I wasn't a bit tempted. Today I don't even bake because my husband got fat, and this year he lost 40 pounds. And he did it by not eating sugar and flour. He doesn't follow our food plan, but he just doesn't eat sugar and flour. And he lost 40 pounds, and he looks great, and he feels fabulous, and his blood pressure's down, and it's been a great bonus to his health. So I don't want to hurt him, and I don't want to hurt anyone else either. So you know, let other people, if they want to bring the cookies and the cakes, let them. I still though have two things that I like to make, and those are two kinds of candies that I make, and I make sure I give them all away. I don't have one left over after Christmas because I don't want my husband to eat them, and I don't want to eat them, and I'm not so stuck on eating during the holidays. It was after the holidays that would get me. By the way, I haven't even qualified. I came into this program in July of 1999. In 2005, I had my first slip, and it was not during holiday, it was during the summertime. And then I had another one in 2015, not in the holidays, but it was after I had taken a position and I was way, way overcommitted in CHAL. I was doing more than I was able to do comfortably, and I had a slip. And then I had another one in 2018. So I have 666 days abstinent today, and I'm back on board, and God willing, on January 19th of 2021, I will celebrate 2 years of continuous abstinence. So I've had a lot of years around the program, but a lot of mistakes too, and a lot of stubbornness, a lot of willfulness. I have one of the things. It says to share a holiday story with a positive ending. Oh, this is a wonderful story.
5 minutes.
A few years ago, my husband and I adopted a family for Christmas. And there were two children, a boy and a girl, and the girl was older. She, in fact, she was 13 at the time, and her name was Sparkle. And Sparkle, one of the things that she wanted was sheet music so that she could play on her piano. And I thought, oh my goodness, she has a piano? So evidently she had a keyboard at home. And I thought, I am going to volunteer to give her lessons. So I, because she was a beginner, so I went and bought beginner's piano books, and I asked about, you know, I had enough background in music that I could teach her a beginner's beginner's piano. And she would come to my house every week, and we did this for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and we became very close friends, and her father has passed away since then, but that was one of the most fabulous Christmas gifts I could ever give, because I got a new friend and a new friendship, and I got to teach this little girl about her first basic things on the piano, and it was really a miraculous thing. So one of the things I like to do at Christmas is to make sure that we adopt somebody, and this year we have a little two-year-old boy that we've adopted through the family Children and Family Services of Michigan, and I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving just with our son and daughter-in-law. There was a family gathering planned, but people decided, now with COVID kind of on the rise again, that we would split up and have two separate groups, and I'm going to prepare my food that I'm expected to prepare. I always prepare homemade bread, and I prepare cranberries and sweet potatoes, and I'm going to make enough for each family and take it to both homes. And then Christmas, it's sort of going to be, probably will be at my son's house again for Christmas. And then we're going to go away for the winter, so it's going to be a little different this year. I would like to say, though, that the things that I've done that have changed my Christmases and my holidays is letting go of expectations. I think Mary mentioned this too. My serenity is dependent on the level of my expectations. And when I have let go of my expectations and making everything perfect, everything is so much more relaxed and fun. And the other thing that I wanted to share is from page 84 and 85 in the big book, and this is in step 10. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find out that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So, as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition, praying, meditating, trying to get out of Joanne, out of myself, and into the lives of others, and trying to be useful to God and my fellows, I don't have to worry about food anymore. I am safe and protected. And I think I will pass. Thank you so much for being here today, everybody, and thank you to all the other speakers, and Linda for asking me to share.
And thank you, Joanne. Thank you so very much. Our next speaker this morning, or this afternoon, depending on where you are, is Shelley. Shelley P.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for getting this together, Linda M. And appreciate all the shares and everyone listening here today, and hope we can say something will help any of us here, and especially newcomers or people coming back. I'll qualify. My name is Shelley. I am a compulsive eater. I've been in the program in absence since March 25th of 1989. By God's grace, everyone's help. That is 21 years and 7 months and 20 days today. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. Why I say that is because I want people to know it's possible. People often think it's impossible to be abstinent without any relapses for this long a period of time. I've often had outreach calls, and they would say to me, "You've been absent that long and you never cheated?" No, no. Because this is a spiritual program, and that's why the holidays don't matter. You know, my higher power is with me every day, not just on Thanksgiving. And, you know, what I wanted to do was part of my share is to read from one of our pamphlets. This is a pamphlet you can access on the www.cahat.org website, or the newcomer tab. Press it down, and you will see on the drop-down menu, weighing and measuring from a food plan. And I would like to read it because I think it's exemplary of what I do for my abstinence and what anyone can do for their abstinence. It's like it's really great addition to the 7 tools, in my opinion. Okay, a cup, a measuring spoon, and a scale. Those who suffer from weight and eating disorders are more than aware of food and its rightness or wrongness as a means to weight loss or weight control. If anything, people who suffer with food addiction do battle so long that we become grandiose about our ability to make choices when it comes to food, meals, and eating in general. What we fail to realize is that after dieting, starving, fasting, and exercising for so many years, we know less about our real relationship to food than we do when we encountered our first diet. This grandiosity may be a setup for conscious failure in the area of controlling our food addiction. Food takes on a life of its own. Somehow addicts tend to destroy any semblance of boundaries about the one thing that is poised to do us in, food and eating. We steadfastly refuse to acknowledge that when it comes to food, we are down for the count. The Food Act unwittingly insists that in the area of food and eating, we can make choices and choose well, even though time and experience have shown this not so. And see how we establish boundaries by insisting that mastery over the physical aspects of weight and eating disorders begins with the act of weighing and measuring every morsel of food eaten. This act clearly defines what is eaten, how much is eaten, and is the most meaningful beginning of honesty. The feeling among those who are recovering from food addiction, eating disorders, or weight disorders is that the reason food addicts are so resistant to weighing and measuring is that it removes the element of control from their purview. Addicts want control over their substance, and weighing and measuring tells the addict they are no longer in the driver's seat. Weighing and measuring also speaks to the willingness of the recovering food addict. Someone else has established the quantities that may be eaten, the time and frequency of the meals, and what is acceptable abstinence as it manifests itself in the CHEL program. The addict has turned over control of everything concerning food. They accept that we must weigh and measure from a food plan. For some, it's the only means of recovery. When to eat or not to eat becomes a critical decision. So in CHEL, we have a food plan. We utilize it as a schematic, a blueprint, to begin the process of honesty and willingness. However, that process can only be manifest if the recovering individual is willing to weigh and measure. Further, since we weigh and measure and utilize a food plan, we know about the boundaries of that first compulsive bite. The boundaries are set. Cross them and we are out again. Stay within them and there is safety and security that comes with adherence to the plan of recovery. Staying within these guidelines and guilt about food takes a backseat to mastery over addiction. Suddenly, all decisions concerning food and quantities are made and accepted. Anxiety, worry, and angst take a back seat to exhilaration and renaissance. The simple act of weighing and measuring from a food plan offers us a chance to become someone new, someone different, someone whole. From this feeling of newness and rejuvenation comes an openness. There come feelings and actions that speak to a new person, not the one that started on the quest and begrudgingly weighed and measured their food from a food plan. This is a serene individual, centered in the now, dedicated to living in the moment, and self-assured that all food decisions have been made, and a life routine under which frees the food addict to make life decisions without being under the influence. A food plan and the act of weighing and measuring affirm the physical nature of this disease. They offer a cause and effect relationship to the most obvious problem we have, eating compulsively. It also allows us to focus on the other physical problems, which we can no longer blame on our weight, our diet, our job, or our family. It shines a glaring light on the effect food has had upon us, and what problems we are having that are not food related. By weighing and measuring, we get a picture of just how much we actually ate and the difference in what we are eating. For years, we've protested we did not eat that much, but utilizing a weighed and measured food plan points out just how much we did eat. Further, a food plan is the beginning of acceptance. We must accept that for someone other than ourselves is doing what is right for us. We need to believe that the plan of eating and disciplines connected with it are a means of to a salutary end. Further, weight and measuring offers us a baseline or database from which to judge how we are doing. Initially, weight loss is the only way we can attest that we are, quote-unquote, doing it. Weighing and measuring is our foundation for recovery. If all else goes wrong in the abstainer's life, we weigh and measure with even greater verve and dedication. Thus, if we are experiencing chaos in other areas or holidays, we're experiencing calm with our food. We accept life as it is because all we can do to control any part of our life is to weigh and measure. Also, it is through the use of a food plan we yearn to let go of other things going on in our life. On a food plan, there are foods we may feel that have been left out and are healthy and necessary. We often share our knowledge with our sponsor, whose response is, "I only sponsor what is on the food plan." The newcomer then strains a bit, but eventually wants what the sponsor has, so learns to let go. When a family crisis arrives, we are told to let go. We have experience in this process in our first dealings with weighing and measuring from a food plan. Weighing and measuring food plan becomes a prototype of accepting things as they really are and letting go of wishful thinking. We define what we eat, how much we consume, so that the task later on of defining who we are and how we fit in the scheme of things has meaning and history. All of this gives us insight into new levels of feeling and allows us to separate the imagined aches and pains of being an addict with the real aches and pains of living in the real world. Above all, we approach things quietly and thoughtfully and learn to weigh and measure decisions, relationships, and choices in our lives and in what we see in others' lives. Weighing and measuring gives us distinctive boundaries. And I wanted to read that because, for me, that is the crux of our program. I ended up in this program entering it $324.99, okay? On Thanksgiving Day of 1998, I was with my husband, my second husband, and my son, who was about 14 at the time. There's a lot of consternation between them, a lot of emotional and mental abuse perpetrated by my second husband. I was trying to think that my other program and his program would eventually stop things, and it didn't. When it got to very much difficulty in the situation where my son was going to call Child Protective Services, I said, "I have to leave. We're going to leave." However, it was Thanksgiving Day right before that, and I thought, we're going to get this family together. We're going to have a frickin' Thanksgiving dinner like that Norman Rockwell painting, you know, where the grandma holds the big, you know, bird on the tray and everybody's smiling around her, you know. I like to say the next picture that Norman Rockwell drew was grandma throwing that all over her shoulders saying, "Screw you all. You know, I did all this work and all I can do is eat it and be crazy and not appreciate anything I did." But anyway, so I was in the kitchen all day because it's a great excuse to be in the kitchen and eat all day when you're, quote-unquote, cooking for Thanksgiving. And it was only the three of us, and I'm vegan now. I was vegetarian then, so I wasn't going to eat any of it. They really didn't like the bird that much. But damn it, I'm going to have a Thanksgiving dinner and put this family together. And I was on Weight Watchers at the time, so I needed a free food. So in any diet I did, I needed a free food. And, you know, that's why I wouldn't do C-How at the beginning, because there's no free food. I always wanted a girlfriend named Impunity so we could go out to lunch or dinner and I could go out with impunity, you know, in my eating. And anyway, so what I ended up doing was I ate these greens. And Weight Watchers, the free food at the time was greens, you know, anything green. So I was eating greens all day long. And at dinner, I ate a starch and I ended up with a small bowel obstruction. I almost died, almost had to have a colostomy bag permanently or temporarily. Rushed to the hospital. I was on a morphine drip for 5 days with an NG tube down me. Now, when they put an NG tube down you to relieve the pressure in your stomach, there's about 8 people that got to yell at you to swallow, 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 because they can't just push it down. And it was the most horrible experience I've ever had. And the pain was excruciating. It was worse than when I gave birth to my son and I was in labor for 36 hours with him. However, after all that experience,
Five minutes.
I thank you so much. I wouldn't do the Sea Health program because there's no free food. And this almost killed me. But I didn't care. So it happened, I started, you know, that from that Thanksgiving day till March, I was always trying to control and enjoy my eating. I tried to control it, I couldn't enjoy it, I tried to enjoy it, I could not control it, says that in the big book. And I ended up exercising, trying bulimia again, which I hadn't since my early 20s. I decided I was a very restrictive compulsive eater. My idea of a binge was having dessert once a week. And even if I had that, I was always trying to work my food so I wouldn't get fat. That's why I wanted a food. Any diet I did had, quote unquote, free food. Free food you could eat without being guilty and or gaining weight. And so it started where I started. I was like 140. Oh, I'll never be 150. 150, I'll never be 160, and so on until I got to 182, and I'm going to be 200. And I didn't know what to do. And all my little plans and designs and tricks I used to use, exercise, restricting food, you know, only certain foods, that kind of thing, only eating on certain days, certain times of the day, nothing was working. It was just going up and up and up, and it was really freaking me out. So I happened to see that movie, Leaving Las Vegas, with Nicolas Cage. If you've never seen it, I recommend it. He couldn't stop drinking. He was a very successful author. And he decided to go to Las Vegas and drink himself to death because he couldn't stop. Because all the doctors telling him he was dying if he wouldn't stop drinking. And I thought, damn it, I'm going to do that. So my son was about 15 at the time, and I'm an orphan. I mean, my parents died from this disease when I was 10 and 12. My mom had cancer. My dad had insulin dependent diabetes. Didn't take care of themselves. They ended up dead. And I just thought, you know what, he'll be fine. I have no relatives, really, but he'll be fine. And that's the thinking I get, you know, in my disease. I don't care about anybody else but me. So I decided to eat everything I wanted. So my cupboard and my refrigerator were right next to each other at the time. And ladies and gentlemen, I started eating anything I wanted. You know what happened? Nothing tasted like anything. And that scared the crap out of me. And I called my friend who'd been in Sea Health many years through Al-Anon. I had learned about it through Al-Anon. I saw her lose weight. So where's the meeting? And there wasn't a meeting for another 2 days. We did not have phone bridge at that point. And I had to wait 2 days. I went to the meeting, and I got a sponsor and got a food plan and that pamphlet I just read you. And I stayed abstinent from that day on, from the 25th of March. Why? Because I was tired. I was frustrated. I was desperate. I wanted to die, and I didn't care anymore. And I knew I had to care, if nothing else, just to be there for my son so he wouldn't be left behind like I was left behind from this frickin' disease. This disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And there's no surprise at any of the holidays. There's plenty of food, and in some households, plenty of drink, because nobody can stand each other, okay? There's all this stuff that goes on, this unconditional love stuff that people don't understand and think they should get and don't get. All the experiences that happened growing up, we were hurt or neglected or abandoned. For me, all those things would come up in those holiday times. You know, I was never good enough, right enough, smart enough, good looking enough. I felt cheated out of a loving companion, overburdened with responsibility and unwanted, unloved, and alone. It was a survival mechanism for me to eat. This is a good boy, good girl drug. You walk down the street with four pink boxes and other snacks, they're not arresting you. But you walk down the street with heroin, crack, cocaine, even pot, it's legal. But if you're high, you can't walk down the street. You know, alcohol is legal. But if you're drunk, you can't be in the street. But food, you can be drunk on food and, yeah, thank you, and get plenty abusive and difficult with yourself and with others. I never understood the connection with food, that I was a food addict till I got in here. I didn't think I was a compulsive eater. I didn't know what a compulsive eater was, but I'm sure I wasn't one. Until I went to a meeting. And so, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to please be absent. I don't care if it's Thanksgiving, I don't care if it's Kwanzaa, Christmas, I don't care if it's Groundhog Day, I don't care if it's Wednesday. Please stay absent. You know why? We need you. We need you to be sponsors. We need to continue this program. The only way this program is going to continue is if people stay absent and become sponsors. And Dr. Bob said it best. He said we do it with a first sense of pleasure to give back to the man that helped us, to have insurance against another slip, and because it's how I stay abstinent. And that's on page 181 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to share here today, and I appreciate Linda for your work here and everyone sharing on the panel and everyone listening. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you so very much. And the next speaker that we have is Jerry. Jerry, are you still with us?
Thank you, Linda. This is Jerry. Can you hear me okay?
I can. And how would you like to be timed?
Okay. Yes, 5 minutes and 1 minute warning, please.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Jerry, compulsive eater, and my abstinence date is February 4th, 2008. That's 12 years, 9 months, and 10 days today, thank God. And I would like to start out, I'd like to start out reading Chapter 5, How It Works, a couple paragraphs from that. How it works, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will stop there. But I really appreciate how it works, as it really does spell out for us, you know, what you know, recovery can do. And yes, being willing to go to any lengths for my abstinence today, it really is a gift. And I will start out as others have, outlining my holidays growing up as a child. I had no boundaries around food. We had alcoholism on both sides of my family, and either side of the family I attended the holidays with, there was resentment, there was anger. There was yelling and shouting, and there was, just kind of chaos wherever I would go. Sometimes with extended family was a little more pleasant, like with the great aunts. There was more pleasantness with them, and so I have some good memories there as well. But I was always obsessed with the food. I was showing up for the food. I wasn't showing up to see family in particular, but there were certain family members that had those things that I just couldn't resist, and I just couldn't wait, you know, to indulge in those things. And as much as I could get, I was always after the flour and the sugar. That was all my focus was, and I don't think I really held back much as a child. I was always overweight that I can remember, and was always just wanting more and more. And so I'm really grateful that, you know, I came to this program with the gift of desperation, and finding relief from the food addiction that's plagued me all my life. My early abstinence experiences with the holidays were very tricky, because I you know, I would show up with the food, my abstinent food, my weight and measured meals, and especially with my parents, I can think in particular, they were very surprised at what my food choices were. And my parents live in another state, so I don't see them very often, but I know that for me, they noticed a change not just in the way I was eating, but also in my attitude, because I when I was in the food, I was always very angry and resentful towards my parents. I was in that victim role with them and blaming them for all my problems. I didn't take any responsibility for my choices and the behaviors and actions that I took when I was in the food. So I was very obnoxious and angry with them. And so when I got abstinent, it was very much a privilege to be able to attend holidays with my parents. So they noticed not only a change in the way that I was eating, and I was getting healthier and losing the weight, and that I was more pleasant to be around. I think that's one of the most important things for me, is being able to cultivate healthy relationships and showing up to be the best daughter, to be the best granddaughter, to be the best aunt, to be the best version of myself, and being abstinent. And when my food is in its place, then, I'm in my place, and I'm getting everything I need. And, of course, that takes preparation. So, yes, there's been a lot of benefits, to being abstinent and, being able to have those celebrate holidays with family members. So I can also, let me think. So some of the challenges I've had with being with family members, getting questioned. I know from one of the newest family members to join the family in the last few years is my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, and her questioning me with, don't you get tired of eating salad? And it was like, that just really stopped me in my tracks because, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, would you ask a person, do they get tired of having cancer? Well, yeah, people get tired of having cancer. They get tired of having diabetes, but, they hopefully are doing what they need to do to take care of themselves. So sometimes those questions really kind of throw me for a loop. But, I think the most important thing, I can be a good example. I eat my abstinent meals. I pay attention to what's on my own plate. It's none of my business what's on other people's plates. And also, having a history of being a people pleaser, which, that kind of wraps into also my relationship with my parents, growing up not being able to please my parents on any level in any area. And I've had to move past that and realize, my parents are, right where they're supposed to be, and it's not my place to try to make them happy. They need to, find that within themselves. It's not my job to please them. And of course, that also, relates to the food. I've learned not to rely on on abstinent food being available at a holiday get-together or, any other kind of get-together. I bring my food. I don't leave it to chance that they're going to provide for me. It's just an unrealistic expectation, which creates resentment if I decide to have that expectation. So that's been a really good lesson for me. Sometimes going to visit my in-laws, mother-in-law will say, well, I made this and this and this, and, come to find out that some sugary syrup or whatever was put on at the end, and I'm like, well, thank you, but no thank you. I choose not to take part in that. And, they have good intentions, but, it's, again, I need to take care of myself. I'm responsible for my abstinence. I'm responsible for my health today. And, and not becoming resentful because they didn't make it my way. That's just not part of the equation. I get to be responsible for myself and my behaviors around that. So, and then the tools that I use, I love the marathon meetings. I've, been able to do service in the marathon meetings in past years, and being able to lead a meeting, you know, and a lot of times, you know, my in-laws, if I'm at their house in particular, they will have their meal at a way different time than my meal time. You know, that's another thing, is being true to myself, taking care of my abstinence, my recovery. I do tend to hold tight to my meal times, and you know, I'm not a people pleaser, so I'm not having an early afternoon dinner with my in-laws, and it's a good time for me to schedule my, you know, service with CEHOW and attend a marathon meeting. So yeah, that's another thing that I've done in the past. And yes, I think it just really just staying focused on my own recovery, yes, making outreach calls and when things might get a little bit uncomfortable, that's also happened, you know, in those moments of expectation from other family members. Maybe it's a good thank you. You know, it's always a good time, or even call my sponsor if she's available and say, you know, this is going on. What do you suggest I do? I think too was mentioned earlier, bookending and calling a friend in the program, calling my sponsor, you know, letting them know, you know, they're having dinner at 3 p.m. and my dinner time is 6 p.m. You know, I'm just checking in with you because this is happening, and maybe I go for a walk, or, you know, maybe I just do something that, you know, that helps me to get through that, and I don't have to sit down with them just because they are, and not to please them. So, yes, just staying focused on myself. What am I doing? Maybe I can do some service, you know, and you know, maybe somebody needs some gifts wrapped or something. I mean, there's always something that can be done, you know, cleaning up something that's not related to the food. Running out of ideas at this moment, but there's a lot of things that can be done other than, you know, being focused on the food. So that really is a gift for me, is being able to show up for the people in my life and not showing up for the food, as I that's really all I did growing up. And yes, being able to have my three weighed and measured abstinent meals and being able to show up for life is the greatest gift today, and to be the best version of myself. Checking, you know, and again, just checking my motives before I I get involved in family discussions as well. Keeping myself in my own hula hoop, and you know, keeping my conversations light with certain family members. I can mention, let's see, another challenging moment that I've had in the recent years with a family member. My grandmother, she played a big part in my compulsive eating. She did not have any boundaries with me as a child, as it was the food, and so she doesn't have any real healthy boundaries. So there has been an occasion when you know, I'm attending a meal with her, and she will just help herself to what's on my plate. And so, yes, that is probably one of the more challenging things I've had with having family meals. That was probably one of the more important moments for me, to be kind, gentle, and patient with a family member that's you know, helping themselves to my weight and measure food. It's not a comfortable place to be. Yes, boundaries are so important when it comes to family members and food, and, you know, letting them know that, you know, this is, you know, what I'm allowed to have, and you'd appreciate, you know, their respect. They're respecting that. So, yes, it's really, really about boundaries for me, and taking care of myself one day at a time, you know, no matter what day of the year it is. You know, and Thanksgiving is on a Thursday, and I will, you know, be prepared for that day, and, you know, just pay attention to what's on my own plate and not worry about what other people are doing. And, yes, having that weighed and measured meal is the most important thing, and paying attention to my behaviors as well, and not getting involved in what other people are doing. So with that, I think that's all I have today. But yes, I encourage anyone who's struggling to, you know, pick up the tools of the program, the 7 tools, and use those tools as much as you need to. If you need to make, you know, 12, 15 phone calls for outreach, you know, just do it. Whatever it takes. You know, I also suggest reading from the Big Book, some of my favorite readings, the acceptance paragraph on page 417 in the Big Book. I also enjoy journaling myself. You know, that really does help. You know, if something's bothering me, I can write it down and write down how it makes me feel and, you know, what I can do better going forward. So, you know, there's different tools we can use. There's so many different things. We've talked to many different people in the program, and we all have so many different nuggets of wisdom to share, and you know, just keep on learning, because that's what keeps me coming back. You know, just to be willing to learn and to be willing to go to any length for my abstinence. And every day is different. Every day has its own challenges, and I get to turn to my higher power and, you know, even ask higher power, who do I call at this moment? You know, and you know, I'll be inspired and think, oh yeah, this person has some experience in this area. You know, that does happen often, and I'm just really grateful for everyone that's you know, supported me over the years and taught me how they handle situations and stay abstinent. Let's see.
That's actually time. I let you go a little longer.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Unless you want to keep going, Terry.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'll close with saying, yes, keep coming back. It works if you work it. And, you know, just, you know, keep turning to the program. Pick up that phone instead of picking up the food. And thank you so much for allowing me to share today.
Thank you so much, Jerry. And I want to thank all of our speakers today. We had Ginger B., Lonnie, Mary Q., Steve P., Joanne S., Shelley P. and Jerry O. And we do have some time left, so I am actually going to go ahead and qualify, and then if we still have time left, we can perhaps do a little bit of question and answer, or if people would like to share a little bit of their own holiday suggestions, we can do that. So my name is Linda M. I'm a compulsive eater, and I have been in See How. My abstinence date is January 30th of 2016. And so I've got 4 years, 8 months, and something days. And I want to thank all of you for being here today. It means a lot to me. And my holiday, I grew up with my parents, a mom and a dad, and an older brother. And I remember our home it wasn't fun. There wasn't a lot of laughter. We were pretty much separated a lot. You know, my brother had his own room. I had my room. And we never really did things together. You know, we vacationed, but that's about it. I used to really think that we were just 4 people living in the same house. And it was kind of a big house, so we could actually be very separate from one another. My mother's from Germany, so all of her family's over there. My father grew up in Hawaii, and so he has a pretty large family. But I grew up in California, in the San Francisco area. So when we had holidays, it was pretty much just the 4 of us having dinner together, which we always did. So it wasn't really that big of a deal. I remember as I was getting to be a little bit old, like junior high, for some reason we got dressed up, and I don't know why. That just suddenly, I think, became important to my mom.
And so we just did that. I remember growing up and watching Charlie Brown and the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving cartoon, and watching them go to Grandma's house, everybody piled up in the station wagon and singing, and I used to wish that that was my experience. You know, like I had my friends, they had family, and they would be driving somewhere, or they would have family over, and that just wasn't my experience. And on top of that, my parents came from cultures where Thanksgiving wasn't something that they grew up with. You know, my father's side of the family being from Japan. So my holidays, at least, certainly Thanksgiving, was not... I remember it feeling kind of lonely. The Christmas holiday was a little different. My mom, we had some German traditions, and those were really special. And I think probably because it was the only kind of tradition that we had that I can recall. I suppose if I looked further, there would be more. So as far as the Thanksgiving holiday, there really wasn't anything, and we didn't watch sports. This is sounding kind of pathetic, really, but it just was another day. And hearing the previous speakers, that actually translates very nicely into this program, that it's just another Thursday. And in this time of shelter in place, I do live in an area in Southern California now with my parents, and taking care of them. And my brother and his wife do live down here as well. And we're going to try and figure out what we want to do in terms of being safe during the holiday. And Southern California, you know, we're gifted with good weather. So it is actually possible that we may be able to just sit outside and really do some social distancing. And I remember one of my early experiences, this was probably the first Thanksgiving when we lived in the San Francisco area. It was my brother and his wife and kids and my parents. We all lived in that same area. So we did get together. Well, whenever we got together, it was for a birthday or a holiday, some sort of a celebration, always around food. And so when I first came into CHOW and was, you know, the idea of no sugar, no flour, weighed and measured, you know, I thought, how can I possibly have relationships with people? You know, what are we going to do? I'm in another 12-step program, and a lot of the socializing has to do around food. And at those meetings, there was generally a lot of food. And then with family, you know, what am I going to do? And at first Thanksgiving, I remember calling my sister-in-law and asking what kind of vegetables, because I thought I'll bring my own proteins. I don't think I was doing grains and fats, and I just wanted to know what kind of vegetables so that I could let my sponsor know. And there was I don't know what was happening, but I got this really big lecture about, I am not going to prepare a special meal for you. And it really knocked me back. And I started crying, and, you know, I don't know what to say. And I didn't actually ask her to make anything special for me. I just asked what she was serving. And it was, I guess, because we did have a couple of birthdays between the time that I actually started in CHOW, which was in June of 2015, you know, up until that Thanksgiving. And so she got to see me walk in with my scale and, you know, with my other special foods and things weighed and measured. And she took it upon herself to I take it personally, and that I was, and I was the the little sister who, you know, always had to have something special. What is Linda doing now? What kind of special treatment does she do now? And that may not be true. That may be, well, it is simply my perception of how other people think of me. And so truly, the way people think of me is none of my business. What's my business is to be in conscious contact with my higher power and behave in a way that I feel is in integrity with God's grace, as I see that, and as you know, what inspires me, how God inspires me. And it was an uncomfortable time, and my food has never been a topic since then. Now and again, you know, she will call and say, "This is what we're having." And then I bring my own stuff because, you know, it's interesting how people, they hear what they want to hear. You know, people have decided that I'm gluten-free or that I'm vegetarian or vegan or I don't know what they, you know. You can have this. It's only got this kind of glaze. Oh, well, thank you so much. You know, and, oh, I've got my own stuff. I recently got braces on my teeth, and that's been kind of a backwards blessing because I can bring my own food, and because sometimes it's hard to chew certain things, and that doesn't seem to get questioned. It makes things easier. I can weigh and measure it, and we're done. And as somebody said earlier, actually a lot of times people don't even notice, or they look at my food and go, "Oh, that looks really good, huh?" And then we'll have a little bit of a discussion, and that's it. So now what's happening when we have family get-togethers, or even not family, when I was with coworkers, when I was working, or with other friends, you know, they've seen me go up and down in weight, and they know that, you know, Linda, she tries this program and she tries that, and then she loses the weight and then she goes back to what she was doing. And so for several years now, I've been the same size, and my mental status in terms of being clear and focused and reliable has been evident. You know, my behavior has definitely changed since becoming abstinent, and I can only bring it back to the tools. You know, every single day, I honor myself, my higher power, this program, by weighing and measuring my food, by talking to people, by going to meetings, you know, and being reminded that I am not alone. Yeah, and the first couple years of abstinence, you know, the holidays, the winter holidays were tough. I was living alone, and I felt very alone, and the marathon meetings just saved me so much because I could call in and there was somebody there. And there were people, I recognized names, I recognized voices, the way we conduct meetings, where there's certain readings that we do, and the way that we share, and time, and it's just such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And to me, the way this program See How specifically has been kind of created and molded, and in the fashion of, you know, following the 12-step program, the AA program from Bill W. and Dr. Bob. To me, just brilliant. It's the only thing that's worked for me. It keeps me sane and a safe, healthy person in the world, in my relationships. And it's because of all of you. It's because my working sponsor, being able to call other people, some of the things that people talk about, that my plans for upcoming holidays, living with my parents, you know, is definitely a challenge. And so I have the marathon meetings. I have a 911 plan for things that I can do. And very specifically, I have movies that I like to watch, TV shows, things that will bring me out of whatever self-pity I might be feeling and bring me to a place where I can laugh. And also the idea of starting with a phone call before an event, after an event, and scheduling time specifically with people to say, I'm going to be with my family between this hour and this hour. Can you just kind of make sure your phone is charged and nearby so if I have to text you that I can do that, you know, or call? And that's been a beautiful, wonderful thing. I'm going to go ahead and stop now because we have just a couple minutes left. And I just wanted to, again, say thank you to all the people that shared today. Thank you all for being here. This will recorded workshop be on the website coming up shortly. We'll announce that when that happens at the PhoneBridge announcements. And also, again, want to remind everybody about the Thanksgiving Marathon that's coming up. It's going to be this year, November 26th. Starts at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time with the Relapse Recovery Meeting. And regular meetings will happen throughout the day, and in between we will have additional meetings, and that will go all the way until our final daily meeting at midnight Eastern Time. So do please to join us. And I think with that, I'm going to go ahead. It's 11:58 here in Pacific Time. And I'm going to stop our recording.